Hi, everyone, and welcome to another exciting episode of Decoding Seafood. Today, we're chatting with Lindsay Gass about the effects and benefits of seafood and omega-3s on fitness and recovery from her unique perspective as a runner, a registered dietitian, a licensed nutritionist, and certified nutrition support clinician. But before I go any further, welcome, Lindsay, to Decoding Seafood.
Hi, thanks for having me on here. Super excited.
Well, we are glad that you were able to take some time out of your day to chat with us. As I mentioned, Lindsay is a registered dietitian and a licensed nutritionist and a certified nutrition support clinician at Jackson Health South here in South Florida. In addition, Lindsay is an avid runner who uses her knowledge as a dietitian and nutritionist to help fuel her passion for running. But as always, it's better for me to have Lindsay talk about herself. So, Lindsay, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So, thank you for the introduction. That covers, you know, the basic points. But I am a dietitian by trade. So that's my full-time job. And running is something that I do that started off as a hobby and kind of progressed into a little bit of a side business, so to speak. So I've been showcasing or sharing my journey with running and getting faster and everything from my injuries to my recovery to what I eat to all of that through Instagram. Mm-hmm. And I, through Instagram, have been able to get connected with the community, the running community in Miami, and different opportunities have blossomed from there. And that's kind of what I do on the side when I'm not, you know, just working and living and having fun.
Well, it sounds exciting. I want to start at the beginning. So tell me, what led you down the path of nutrition? What did Lindsay, as a child decide that she wanted to explore nutrition? Did it kind of just happen along the way? What kind of put you in that direction?
Well, it did not happen as I was a child. I kind of fell into the role. So a little bit about myself. My background in school, I always had a passion for both art and science. And in high school, I took some advanced classes, some science classes, and I found them to be a bit challenging. And I think at the time that I was applying to college, I was a little bit burnt out from academics. So I decided to go more the artistic route. So long story short, I went to an art school for about a year, decided I liked it, but it wasn't really for me. So when I came back to Miami, I transferred to Florida International University, so FIU. And my goal was to kind of just figure out what I really wanted to do moving forward and go from there, potentially transfer. But I ended up taking a nutrition class as a kind of like a core credit that we needed to take. We got a list of options we had to fulfill either for like a science, an art, something like that. And the nutrition class just sounded cool. Well, unbeknownst to me, it was actually a really challenging and very interesting class. And through there, I discovered the whole career choice of being a registered dietitian and kind of switched over, kind of fell in love. So after that, I changed my major shortly. After changing my major, I got involved in the Student Dietetic Association, which landed me then a job as a diet tech while I was an undergrad at Baptist Health, which is another pretty prominent hospital system in South Florida. So I worked there for a few years and then moved forward with my internship. And long story short, I've been a practicing dietitian for almost 10 years now.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I'm curious, what's a typical day like, or is there a typical day?
I would say it is a typical day. So what I do is I work full time at, as you mentioned, Jackson Health System downtown in Miami, and I work a full 8-hour shift. But before that is when I kind of get in my own hobbies and running. So what I like to do is I start my day very early because I like to have a very slow pace. Morning. So I'll wake up maybe between 4:45 and 5 a.m., sit, have my coffee, kind of collect myself for the morning, and then I'll head out for a workout, usually a run or the gym. And then after I do that, I come back and will make myself breakfast, walk my dog, do a little bit of the chores, take a shower, and then head into work. And then when I get to work, I have a pretty standard flow of checking my patients, screening, deciding who are the patients that I need to see that day. Most of my patients tend to be very sick and critical. I work in the ICU. So it's a very science forward medical nutrition therapy style that I work with, or area of nutrition, I should say. So I do that. I see my patients. I work with different teams, surgeons, doctors, therapists, and kind of schedule my day that way. And then after that, go home and have fun.
That is a long day. I'm curious, what time do you go to bed if you're waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning? Jeez, that's a long day.
It can be, and that's a good question. Typically, I go to bed anywhere between 9 and 10.
Okay, that's not too bad. Well, so here's what I'd love to know. To keep the schedule that you just told me, and, you know, just people in general, you know, you need to keep your body fueled, and you need to keep it fueled and well-balanced. So I'm curious, what do you hear are the biggest obstacles when you talk to people about, like, getting their nutrition right? Or even for you yourself, I mean, like I said, with that schedule that you keep, I would imagine that you need to keep your nutrition very balanced. So what do you think are the biggest obstacles out there?
Well, I'll start with the obstacles, and then I'll tell you how I have, you know, a little bit of an advantage being a dietitian. I think for most people, the top two reasons or obstacles to, you know, getting their nutrition right and in good habits is, one, the lack of information or potentially misinformation. Nutrition is a growing and ever-changing field. So, you know, 1 minute a certain food is healthy, and then the next minute it's considered unhealthy based on whatever new research that comes out. But as a registered dietitian, because I have a background in science, I actually have a bachelor's of science is my undergraduate degree. I have the skills to be able to read research and kind of tell whether it is the type of research that can be applicable, if it's something that makes sense, if the study design makes sense, and I can apply that to real life. So I do stay on top of nutrition research generally and for my job, but I also have the background of, you know, knowing which kind of healthy foods and, you know, a balanced food group is really the key to good nutrition. I mean, it's the basics. Your 5 servings, fruits and vegetables a day, you know, nothing extreme, no extreme restrictions, no extreme consumption of certain foods. And I think that's what a lot of the research ends up pointing back to over time. And I like to, when I educate my clients or friends or any patients, I try to bring them back to, you know, just simplifying nutrition, not getting so worried about, you know, what's the new hot food or buzzword or things like that, but just focusing on the basics, just getting in your fruits and vegetables and taking the time to plan your meals. I think that's a big one. So that's something I do regularly is I meal prep and I'll bring my breakfast and lunch or whatever I need to fuel myself throughout the day.
I think you touched on a really great point there. And I do think we tend to overcomplicate things sometimes. And, you know, things can be sustained for a finite amount of time, but if it's so restrictive or it's complicated, then it's hard for us, I think, to kind of just keep doing it, you know? So I think, I mean, that definitely resonates with me. I want to talk a little bit about the other passion in your life, and that's running. So I know how you got into nutrition, but how and when did running start? Is it something that you've always liked?
That's an excellent question, and it's kind of a funny story. So to answer that directly, no, it's not something I always liked. In fact, when I was in high school and middle school, I absolutely hated running. It was the kind that, you know, when we had a mile test in PE and we had to run the track 4 laps, I hated running so much that I walked the whole thing. And I remember my coach or teacher yelling at me, telling me it was for a grade and, you know, I needed to pick up the pace, but I didn't. But the sports that I was involved in was more cheerleading and dance. So I was always active, but I didn't have that strong aerobic base. And some point towards the end of high school, and as I was going into college, I kind of just wanted to feel more fit, feel comfortable exercising. So I started on the treadmill just a couple minutes at a time. And it was very difficult for me. And little by little, I just stayed consistent and stuck with it and decided, okay, I would like to sign up for a race. You know, this will kind of put my efforts to the test. And I knew so little about running that I signed up for what I thought was a 5K, and that's one of the shorter distance races you can do, and that's 3.1 miles. Well, when I signed up for, unbeknownst to me, a half marathon and found out it was 13.1 miles, not 3.1, I decided, well, I guess I have to train and become a runner now. So after that, I ended up falling in love with it and getting in a group and started training, and that kind of just started my journey from like very little experience running and my journey getting better each year.
And what distance do you like to run now? I've spoken to a couple runners and they all seem to have their little niche of what they, you know, like their sweet spot. What's yours?
I would have to say half marathons, actually. So the first big race that I ever did, I think it's a good kind of intermediate distance between short sprinting races, which are a lot faster and a harder effort, and you know, not necessarily a full marathon, which I actually have not done yet, but I will be doing my first marathon at the end of the year.
Oh, well, I will definitely follow you. So getting back to what we're chatting about, you know, at the beginning of the podcast, I said that I think you have a unique perspective of the correlation between nutrition and running. So can you talk a little bit about that and how you've possibly tweaked your nutrition along the way as you have just kind of educated yourself?
Yes. So even though I do have the background in nutrition and dietetics, that doesn't necessarily mean I was fully equipped and knowledgeable on how to feel myself as a runner. So I did go through trial and error and a lot of experimenting. With myself. But what I came to learn is still eating a balanced diet, which I normally did, but then there was additional nutrients that I needed that I didn't realize at the time, such as iron, certain vitamins and minerals, certain types of protein for recovery, such as creatine. And just the more that I became interested and experienced in running and actually developed a couple deficiencies such as iron deficiency anemia one season while I was running, I learned, you know, even though I do eat a healthy diet, I wasn't eating enough to fuel my sport. So what I like to tell people now is, you know, even though you think you're eating healthy or eating what's considered a normal diet, that may not be normal if you're an endurance athlete. So just keeping in mind that there's things that we need in higher quantities more than maybe what we're used to or what's recommended for the average healthy diet.
Okay. So I want to start to get specific. So since we're talking about seafood, I want to try and get your perspective and understanding on how seafood and omega-3s in particular help with fitness and recovery when training, whether it is, you know, what I would call the weekend athlete that just kind of gets out there to, like, you know, get themselves moving, or somebody like you that's obviously competing. You know, what can you explain to our audience about omega-3s? Like, why are they important? What are they, for starters? Why are they important? And why should we all care about them regardless of whether we're athletes or not? And I know that was a lot that I just said, but hopefully you can break it down into little nuggets and tell us about it.
Absolutely. And those are all excellent questions. So I think the good place to start at is, what is omega-3? What does that mean? So omega-3 is considered an unsaturated fatty acid. We, as humans, everybody, needs to consume fat within our diet. This is important for our joint health, for the production of sex hormones, such as testosterone and estrogens and things like that. It also helps keep our joints healthy. And the idea is, for essentially a healthy diet, is you want to consume more unsaturated fatty acids compared to saturated fatty acids. So saturated fats are the type of fats that you may find in a lot of red meat, a lot of dairy, a lot of animal products. Whereas unsaturated fats, which are made up of both omega-3 and omega-6 acids, which I'll talk about in a second, are found in a variety of food groups. So you can have from lean protein sources such as seafood, and as well as some plant sources, which are used to usually make vegetable oils, or even things like seeds and nuts also contain a lot of those unsaturated fatty acids. So when we talk about unsaturated fatty acids, we can break them down into two groups. You have your omega-3s and your omega-6. And basically the name and reason they're called that has to do with their chemical structure, and they work a little bit different in the body. The main difference between omega-3 and omega-6 is that omega-3s are what we consider an anti-inflammatory fatty acid. So it works in the body to help reduce inflammation. And then you have omega-6, which is considered a pro-inflammatory fatty acid. Now, this ends up becoming a bit of a controversial or hot take with the omega-6 fatty acids, because a lot of those tend to be in seed oils, which is used too much, I would say, in a lot of processed and packaged foods. And there's a lot of concern now that seed oils or omega-6 fatty acids in abundance are causing systemic inflammation in the population, both whether you're just an average consumer or even an athlete. And the idea is that a lot of us, or all of us, need a balance between the omega-3s and the omega-6, or we need a balance between pro-inflammatory fatty acids and anti-inflammatory fatty acids, because your body actually uses both for good things. You know, a lot of times people may think inflammation in the body, that's so bad, I don't want it. You actually do want it in certain aspects. For example, if you were to get a tiny cut on your finger, what happens is all the cells in your body rush to that cut, and it's called the pro-inflammatory response. So all this inflammation is happening so that the cells go there and start to repair and block the blood and make it clot, and so you can eventually heal. So that process, the inflammation and anti-inflammation, is happening all the time in the body. Now, what happens is when you're over-consuming the omega-6 or pro-inflammatory fatty acids, you have too much inflammation in the body. So what research is finding is that because we're over-consuming these seed oils or these omega-6 fatty acids, we're not getting the right ratio of omega-3 to omega-6. So that's why consuming, you know, foods or supplements specifically high in omega-3 fatty acids is going to be a lot beneficial for helping control that, you know, over-inflammation that's happening in the body, both just for the average healthy person and especially for an athlete.
That's interesting. I have never really heard about omega-6s. I mean, I've heard about them a little, but I've never really heard a really good explanation of that. So thank you for that. That actually does make some sense.
Oh, you're welcome.
So as you said, you know, it's important for everyday people, but even more so for athletes. So can you talk about why it's more important for athletes? Obviously, they're straining their body more, so I would assume they need more nutrient-rich foods and supplements. Can you explain it a little more? I'm probably a lot better than I can.
Yes. So building on what we were talking about with, you know, every person needs a good balance between, you know, that pro-inflammatory response and that anti-inflammatory response. If we're already consuming a lot of omega-6 or inflammatory fatty acids, which, you know, you could probably say most of the American population is, an athlete on top of that has even more inflammation present in their body if they're doing a high volume of training or sports. Because anytime you do perform an exercise, you're putting your body through stress, you know, so getting the heart rate up, putting pressure on your joints, on your bones, that is causing low-level inflammation. In fact, a little side note, I learned as I was, you know, doing my own experimentation and research on myself as a runner, when you do consume nutrients or let's say take supplements, it's actually better to take them not at the time you're working out. So if you can take them at the opposite time of the day, that will actually improve your chances of absorbing those nutrients in a supplement. So, for example, if you were an athlete and like me, and you like to run in the morning, if you're someone who takes supplements or vitamins, you're better off taking those later in the day or at the opposite time of your workout. Because after a workout, there is still a lot of inflammation going on in the body. Blood's going to different areas. It's going to different tissues. You know, there's a lot of breakdown and repair that's going on, which is important in the normal process of working out. But there's certain things you can do to try to maximize your nutrient absorption and kind of improve your overall nutrition if you time it against the assumed inflammatory response that's happening in your body.
That's interesting. I had no idea. I think you may have set off a light bulb for some people to retake or to reevaluate, I should say, when they're going to take their supplements and vitamins, because I've never heard that before. That's very interesting.
Yes, but I will say that not to say, you know, that you should have that mindset with fueling, right? So if you think, oh, I just worked out, there's too much inflammation in my body, you know, maybe I shouldn't eat because my body won't absorb it. That is not the case. It's a completely different biochemical mechanism. So you just want to put that, you know, gold star there that you definitely want to refuel and give yourself proper nutrition after a workout.
Thank you for the footnote. Let's talk about seafood, because seafood is one of the better sources for omega-3s. And I wanted to know how you felt about that and, you know, where seafood fit into your diet and to your recommendation for other people's diet.
Yes. So you are correct. Seafood is a really high source of omega-3 fatty acids, because this is what we consider like our fatty fish or fatty seafood, like your mollusks and crustacean. These contain high levels of the unsaturated fatty acids like omega-3. So they serve as a really good source for anyone trying to improve their intake of omega-3 fatty acids, which, like I mentioned, most Americans are not getting enough. They're getting too much of the omega-6, not enough of the omega-3. So incorporating something like salmon, which I believe to be is one of the second highest or most potent sources of omega-3, including that in your diet at least 2 to 3 times a week, is really helpful in helping promote cardiovascular health and reducing systemic inflammation in the body. Omega-3s are also really important and part of the Mediterranean diet in a way, because the Mediterranean diet, which is one of the most widely studied and most beneficial diets for improving overall health and reducing cardiovascular disease. This is, I believe, because it has a lot of those unsaturated fatty acids, and there's emphasis on what we call these good or healthy fats. That's what we mean when we do say unsaturated fatty acids. And salmon particularly is a great source, as well as other seafood. So if you can make the swap of, you know, having more seafood or a healthy fatty fish like salmon in your diet instead of something like a red meat or even a chicken, it's actually more beneficial because it's more nutrient dense, and at least speaking from that unsaturated fat aspect.
Okay. Well, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit, and I'm going to ask you about your cooking skills. So my question is, first of all, do you eat salmon or other seafood, really? And if you do, what's your go-to way of preparing it?
Excellent question. I definitely eat seafood and salmon. I actually probably eat salmon a lot more regularly than I do other seafood, because I feel like you just get a lot more nutrition bang for your buck. It's a good source of protein. It's a low source of saturated fatty acids, and it's really easy to cook. Honestly, I typically buy like a frozen or fresh fillet, and the best way I like to cook it is throwing it in the oven on a sheet pan at 400 degrees for about 15 to 16 minutes, depending on how thick the fillet is. And honestly, less is more. I do a very simple seasoning of olive oil, salt, pepper, maybe a little bit of lemon, but you can even get creative topping some pesto, or even a Dijon dressing will sit on that and crust and bake really well. And that's one of my favorite ways to eat salmon.
That sounds yummy.
In fact, I have that for lunch today. That's what I packed and brought to work.
There you go. Well, in the interest of getting you to work, getting to work and getting to see that your patients that I know are probably waiting to see you, I'm going to start to wrap up a bit. And I want to ask you that besides omega-3s, what other benefits do you see from salmon from a nutritional point of view?
That's a good question. I think it's just an excellent protein source. So it's a protein source that has obviously the omega-3s, as we mentioned, and in particular, when you compare it to, let's say, poultry, it also has a lot more nutrients such as vitamin B12. B12 is a really important vitamin that has to do with energy metabolism. And a lot of times people who consume maybe more of a plant-based diet or don't consume a lot of dairy or red meat or especially seafood run the risk of not having adequate B12 levels within their body and obviously within their diet. So if I had the choice between, let's say, a piece of salmon and a chicken, I think the salmon would be a better choice just because it has those nutrient-dense qualities and also a great source of protein.
Thank you, Lindsay. And thank you for taking the time with us today. I want to give you the opportunity now to just kind of touch on anything that you think that, you know, maybe we haven't touched on already and maybe beneficial to our listening audience.
Okay. So I did want to mention one other thing about omega-3 fatty acids is that they break down into smaller particles, which are used in the body. The forms of omega-3 fatty acids that are used in the body for these anti-inflammatory effects are EPA and DHA. These two types of fatty acids are found in the omega-3 fatty acids, typically in fish and animal proteins. But then, on the other hand, you do have plant sources of omega-3s, such as flax seeds and chia seeds. The problem with the plant source of omega-3 is that it's actually a different type of fatty acid called ALA. And this ALA actually has to be converted into EPA and DHA to be used in the body. And the concern with this is that there's a limited amount of enzymes that can actually convert this in the body. So if you were to consume plant sources of omega-3 fatty acids, although you are getting a little bit of those good effects, such as anti-inflammatory, it's not necessarily going to be as potent and as bioavailable as sources from, let's say, seafood.
That makes perfect sense. Thank you for adding that tidbit in. Lindsay, it has been so much fun chatting with you and honestly learning more about seafood and omegas and the difference between them and how to fit them into our diet and just how to be healthier. So I want to thank you for doing that for us, and I hope it's been as much fun for you as it has been for me. In wrapping up, if people want to find out more about you or if you think that there are consumer-friendly websites that are out there that kind of dive more into the topics that we've been talking about, where would you recommend people check out?
That's an excellent question. I think if anyone wanted to check out some sort of information about omega-3 fatty acids or the health effects of either, I would choose a well-established, reputable website or health system, you know, anyone that you might be familiar with, such as like a Harvard Health or even WebMD. That is kind of like a quick search you can do that will eventually lead you to other information. But I would be wary of getting nutrition information from a non-health professional or not certified professional, such as, you know, maybe just a blogger or influencer. So if you can look for some kind of credentials when you are searching this information, that would be the best.
Thank you. Well, again, thank you, Lindsay, for taking the time out. And I am looking forward to us probably chatting again in the future and learning about some more things to do with fitness and nutrition.
Oh, thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking with you too.